protest are not the big holdup to defense acquisitions that maybe people in industry think they are. New data from the Congressional Research Service shows protests aren't bad news for acquisitions. Protests tend to push agencies to take action and resolve it themselves. Steve Schooner is co-director of the Government Procurement Law Program, George Washington University, looking at all the data from the CRS's work. Steve, thanks very much for coming on the program today. The numbers and data that have just come out from CRS, when you look over the whole scope of it, what do you see there that you think's interesting? Thanks for your time today.
So first, thanks for having me. Second, you know, look, I applaud CRS for actually doing this, and they do great work, and I think they pretty much got it all right. Nothing in the report is going to be a surprise to anybody who really studies this, but it does respond to a lot of the sensationalist critics who have consistently said that protests are the end of the world, and frankly, they're just not. And I think that CRS does a beautiful job basically taking the wind out of the sails and particularly explaining why there are protests, and if you really want to make protests, how to go away, how you could make that happen.
And what are some of the techniques both that CRS has laid out about making protests go away and that you and your colleague Dan Gordon have talked and written and researched about that would make that happen?
Okay, so there's two things that are buried towards the end of the report, both of which are excellent. But the first, they go right through a list. They say, look, why do most companies protest? They protest because they believe the government made a material error. They protest because the solicitations were written poorly, which led the companies to conclude they were treated unfairly. There are some predatory protests, very, very small numbers, where a service contractor thinks they can get an extra few months of work out of it. But the big one is poor communication. When the government doesn't give the contractor a debriefing at all, or they give them an inadequate debriefing, the contractor thinks the government's hiding something. So this is all about communication 101, and I think we see the same thing play out when we look at why they sustain the protests.
And when you say it's all about communications, I hear communications involved in all three of those elements that you lay out.
Absolutely. And the most interesting thing, and Dan has always been extremely articulate on this, but there is a golden rule on how you do formation of government contracts. The government has a tremendous amount of discretion. As long as the government tells the private sector exactly how they're going to choose their business partner, and they do what they say they're going to do, GAO always backs them up. What you can't do is go out on the street and say, I'm going to pick a contractor based on quality and then award based on low price later after the private sector has spent time and money trying to respond to the government solicitation. So it's all about communication and consistency, and I think GAO has backed up the government on that score for decades.
And that's one really big frustration that I hear from industry all the time regarding protests that has made sense as they've said it, and then makes more sense in light of this work from CRS, which is we can tell sometimes, even though the solicitation says that it's going to be a best value contract, we can really tell what they're shooting for, which is LPTA.
Exactly. And CRS, as you indicated, they laid out the five most common reasons for why they sustain a protest or why they overturn the award of a contract. If the government doesn't adhere to the established evaluation criteria, if the government makes a flawed source selection decision, if they do an unreasonable technical evaluation, if they don't follow the process, but at the end of the day, the other one is failure to maintain adequate documentation. So, follow the rules, show everybody that you did exactly what you said you're going to do, GAO backs up every time.
Why do you think then, when this is all laid out there, and as you say, none of this probably surprises anybody, why has this been difficult for the agencies to get together, to get it all together in order to cut down the number of protests, even though the numbers seem to indicate that protests are not this widespread crazy problem that some people think?
Well, I think the last thing you said is really the important one. First of all, CRS pointed out that the protest numbers are not disproportionately high today, and even though there's been a little bit of an increase since 2008, it's still well below the peak back from the early 1990s. So that's number one. But number two, the number of procurements that are protested are statistically insignificant. Now, it is true that a lot of the biggest, most significant protests do get protested. But as a general rule, a protest is a pretty unusual thing. We're talking 2,500 protests across the entire federal government, spending between $400 and $500 billion a year. It's just not that big of a deal.
I asked your colleague Dan Gordon when he was on the program last time if we knew the dollar value of all of the protested contracts historically and in the most recent available year. He said no, and I proposed that that would be a great assignment for one of your students at the GW Government Procurement Law Program. And I don't know if he ever took me up on that or not, but I still think that would be great information for us to have to give us more context, more scope of what's really going on in the protest area.
I think you make a good point, and it's interesting. CRS tried to draw the correlation between spend rate and protest rate. And they pointed out, for example, that early in the last decade, that as the amount of spending went up, the protest rate didn't go up accordingly. But of course, after 2008, with dramatic economic and budgetary distinctions, we saw a little bit of a kink in the curve, and the rate of protest increased very quickly. I think, though, that if we were going to engage in such research, which would actually be pretty exhaustive, it would be interesting to look at the protests that actually get taken to fruition, the ones that are taken seriously, rather than the staggering numbers that are eliminated in the first couple of weeks. And CRS does a good job pointing out that a lot of protests are basically thrown out by GAO quite quickly because there's no there, or there's no meat on the bone.
Yeah, that makes sense. I see your point there, and I think you're exactly right. So I would amend my suggestion for some research done, with the caveat that I do get that it would be tremendously exhaustive and intensive for one or a group of your students to undertake. Another part of the CRS work that I think was really fascinating, Steve, was they tried to get inside the brains of the people that are doing acquisitions and understand the impact that even the threat of protest might have on the way they construct the contracting vehicles and the request for proposal and all of that.
Great topic.
And I think that's another issue that we've heard vendors talking about, which is the way that these are written such that we can tell they want to try to do it in a way that we won't be able to protest it if we don't win.
So I think that the real concern here is the overreaction. The party line has historically been that protests make acquisition officials risk averse. In other words, they're far more inclined to do something that's rule-based rather than something that's creative because they don't want the protest. Unfortunately, and this is why the CRS report is so valuable, their findings don't support that. If you have an incredibly discretionary, creative approach, you disclose it to the public, and you do what you said you were going to do, you're not going to lose a protest. You only lose a protest when you basically say you're going to do one thing, and then you do something differently. And you mentioned earlier the LPTA, the lowest price technically acceptable. The government gets in a tremendous amount of trouble here because they go out on the street and they say, we're going to award lowest price technically acceptable. Then the proposals come in and they realize that they are not going to make the best value decision for the government. They're going to award to someone who's minimally compliant, but they're not going to get the kind of quality and service they could have gotten if they had written a better solicitation. And then they try to change boats in the middle of the stream. That's how the government gets in trouble.
And what drives that, I think, please correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, is that the subject of the fear or aversion that people have when they're writing these has shifted from losing a protest and having their decision on a procurement reversed to being protested in the first place.
Yeah, although I'm not sure that CRS necessarily comes to that finding. I do think it's true that acquisition officials don't want to be protested. But more importantly, I think they don't want to be overturned. I'm not sure that I saw anything in the report that really suggested that we were seeing dramatic changes at the individual acquisition decision-making level that suggested that the risk aversion was driving the trend as you describe it.
Yeah, I didn't see anything in the data there. That was something that I derived on my own from looking at the information and then adding that to the anecdotal information that I hear from people who are doing this, you know, who are in the trenches on an ongoing basis, that the sense from the COs is more, I don't want to be protested at all, rather than, boy, I sure hope if I get protested that it's not overturned.
So let me just put a slightly more optimistic spin on it.
Okay.
Just to kind of shine the light on a recent Air Force initiative. And I admit, I really don't like the shorthand moniker they've been using for it. But with regard to debriefings, the Air Force talks about what they call their open kimono debriefing, where they basically award the contract, and then they say to the disappointed offers, look, we're not going to end this debriefing until you're satisfied that we've given you all the information we have and all your questions have been answered. So come look. You want to come look at our files? Come look. Anything you want, we'll give it to you, and we're not going to end this debriefing until you're happy. The Air Force would tell you nobody's protesting in those cases because once they have all the information, they're satisfied, they learn what they need to learn to compete the next time, and they move on. Again, lousy name, but it goes back to the theme that tell the public what you're going to do, do what you said you were going to do, and then communicate effectively with them about how you behaved and how the contractor can be more competitive next time. We don't see a lot of protests in those kinds of situations.
And it strikes me that there's far less risk involved there than there is involved in doing it the way that a lot of agencies are doing it now.
I think that's right. But we come back to the risk aversion issue. There is a sense that government officials are less inclined to speak freely and therefore negotiate aggressively with the contractors if they feel that they're going to have to disclose all their documents. Now, let's be clear. The Federal Acquisition Regulation makes very, very clear that they want the government to aggressively negotiate with their potential business partners. But historically, we've seen that contracting officers are more inclined to do kind of sanitized, generalized, written negotiations than get at the table and really barter aggressively because they like the comfort of the paper record. And I think that's a shame.
Steve, I really appreciate your analysis on this. There's a lot in that CRS report. There's a lot of meat to it, and you've really helped us understand it.
Thanks for having me on.